Thank you for listening to the Following Films podcast. Today I'm joined by John Shevchenko, or as you might know him online, Hyphenix. Known for pushing the boundaries of live streaming with his hilarious and unpredictable content, Hyphenix has garnered a massive following of millions on his YouTube channel and significantly impacted the live streaming community. In this episode, we chat about how he rose to prominence, we take a look at his creative process, and discuss the future of streaming. But before our conversation with John, I'd like to take a moment to thank our sponsor, Bookmans, an independent bookstore that believes in the magic of storytelling and in the cinematic arts. To expand your collection of films, music, or books, visit your nearest Bookmans and discover something truly wonderful. And if you haven't already, please follow the Following Films podcast on Spotify to show your support. This will help us to continue to bring you in-depth conversations with the talented individuals who shape the world of cinema. I hope you enjoy the show. Thanks.
Okay, try that now.
Hello?
Okay, well, let me get it off of that.
Okay, awesome, because I was...
There we go, got it.
You hear me?
Fuck, I thought this was starting into a prank right away.
No. I hear you loud and clear. You hear me?
Yep, we're good.
Awesome. How you doing?
I'm doing good, man. You think that 4 years into this bullshit, I would be used to this by now and be able to get this down?
Nah, dude. I Zoom every single time. I go into it sweating because I'm always assuming either it's going to have a 10% chance it's going to work or it's going to fuck up, and I can't get anything to work, and I don't even know what's going on anymore because like everything seems to be working. So don't worry. This is...
Okay. Yeah, I've accepted it, the failure, yeah, right, at this point, so which is good.
That's just Zoom, dude. Don't worry. It's stressful. But how you doing? Good?
I'm doing good. Doing really, really good, man. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this today.
Oh, really, absolutely. Pleasure. Thank you so much as well.
Well, I'm excited to talk to somebody that's in digital content creating, because normally I talk to filmmakers, actors, writers, directors, and I think that there's just such an exciting new medium where really it's this, essentially you're playing with a lot of the tools of cinema, but in this short form and live stream format. In fact, you're playing with horror tropes in a lot of ways in these videos and the things that you're known for now, which I find just endlessly entertaining. And could you just talk a little bit about the transition from video games, you know, live streaming those to this idea of just kind of scaring people in comedy?
Well, yeah. So a long time ago when I started, I had a whole somewhat of a set of hair. I didn't have a mustache, and I used to do gaming and whatnot. And that content was a long time ago for me. But I used to do commentating with esports organizations like Team Liquid, and very much into the gaming community. But it was about 4 years ago when I stumbled across Omegle, and I remember Omegle has existed for a really long time. I just didn't even know that even like it still even existed many years ago when I stumbled upon it. And at first, I never really had the intention like, oh, I'm going to jump scare people. I'm going to scare people. I was like, let's see if I could just do some kind of interesting content, maybe some skits, some ideas here, and try out some different things. There was like a lot of trial and errors. You know, some things worked, some things were funny, some things really just didn't work. And obviously, I had always the interaction in my chat letting me know, hey, this is funny. This sucks. Don't do this again. That's great. Change this. And with that whole process, over the years, I realized something. You know, maybe I don't even have to try so hard to even do some theatrical thing to scare people. I came to a realization quickly that people are just so terrified, so scared of someone that's in a dim room running towards the camera, bald with a mustache. It's like it fulfills every horror aspect. Like there's a creepy bald guy that knows my name. He says I know where I live. I'm going to die. And that kind of thing, I was able to realize, wait a second, just the physical appearance is the scariest thing. And maybe even adding, like, for example, my wife as a hostage in real time with them.
Yeah.
It's like the whole entire cherry on top, because they'll be like, oh, is this even real? And then I'll bring my wife in real time, be like, yes, it is, Jonathan. It is real. She's going to have to die because of you, and then skip. Which, you know, just really concrete evidence that, oh, this guy's being serious. I learned very quickly that people are terrified of just such a simplistic concept and an idea that we dumbed it down, actually, essentially, to very quick, fast-paced jump scares coming out of the room for 1 second.
Yeah.
It'll run away in 1 second, because that's what people typically do. When they get scared, they run away. So It's been a wild journey, but here we are today, scaring people with just the mere existence of being bald with a mustache at this point.
Well, you have to lean into the things that you have. So if you try to either fight against it, there's something that just for me doesn't work with it. I accept who I am, what I look like. I know this lot in life. I get it completely. So yeah, I totally understand that. Then just, I love some of the things that you're doing with the editing. Is it that you're screwing with the idea? It's live stream, but you're playing with the form where it feels like a cut, where it seems like they've skipped possibly, but they're actually still with you. Is that what's going on in these?
So essentially, I am literally on the spot trying to see how can I manipulate somebody into thinking that I'm maybe gone or moved on to the next person.
Yeah. And
realistically, it's very simple. On most days when it's just me by myself, I'm just using my mouse to click between scenes as fast as possible so that they are, you know, still paying attention. There are days that I'm really fortunate to have somebody on my side 1 inch away. I'll be like in the dark, try to get as much information as I can or try to scare them without doing too much, going away, turning the lights on as quietly, switching the person out quickly within like 2 seconds, turning back the camera. They think they skipped to somebody else. And then I use that other person that either might be another content creator or a friend, help me make them forget. They'll be like, oh, there was this creepy Paul guy. And they're like, no, you're crazy. That didn't happen. What are you talking about? And wait for them to really let their guard down and then come right back in, either with their name or popping back up. Those are some of the most intricate ones just because those need to be done super fast in real time. But for the most part, it's just me clicking a mouse as fast as possible for the next scene and hope they stick around.
Now, is that something where some of these ones that are incredibly intricate, difficult to pull off, they end up being the ones that are satisfying to you, but then the ones that really connect with people tend to be the super simple ones that were just, like you said, a click of a mouse, and then it just works for some reason?
Yeah, no, some of them are simple, and the reaction is phenomenal because, I mean, people love a jump scare, and they love getting scared. But I do have some extremely intricate pre-tapes that I've done that are over the top. And what I've learned over the year of doing it is like the longer something is, the more unbelievable something is. It is so hard for someone to stick around because they're already too scared to figure out what's happening next because they have that initial genuine real fear of like, oh, I'm closing my laptop. I'm throwing my phone. I'm skipping. So like, sadly, 90 to 80% of the time, some of the best reactions slip away because they are just scared. And some reactions that I have that are honestly, some of my favorite are because people were shocked and feel like a deer in headlights, not knowing what to do, but just panicking and sitting there thinking, I don't know what's happening, but I'm here. Those are the best reactions, honestly.
Have you found people that were looking for you at this point, I would assume?
Yeah, sadly, yeah. as the popularity of like short-term media on Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube shorts have blown up, a lot of people do go on these websites to come across me and they will be like, okay, now I'm here. Do it. I'm ready.
Doesn't work.
I'll let them know that's not how that works. There's a live audience watching. And even if I did do a jump scare, you're just going to tell me I didn't get scared because you expected it. So I have to sadly let them down. I mean, honestly, sometimes just because if I'm desperate and it's been a bad day of just trying to get a reaction, I will just gaslight them and tell them that's not me and still try to scare them.
I've seen it work. You've had a couple where that does you get that moment of recognition and just jump in and it.
Yeah, so it works sometimes, but yeah, for the most part, I have to let them know that's just not how any of that works. I can't scare someone with a jump scare if they know what's happening.
So then, what do you think the appeal of the jump scare is? I have my own ideas about it. I'm a big genre guy. I love horror films.
I feel like the big appeal for it and the big success for it is that there's genuinely no language barrier for it. There are some reactions and some great instances that I've had where I've said no words. I've exchanged nothing. They've just saw me skip, popping behind, scream. And I think everyone universally loves to watch someone get scared, whether it just be someone that's gullible or a full grown man not expecting what's going on. They all can relate and find that funny. So I think that's just like the true magic behind it. Simplicity and plus people just all love a good jump scare. I feel like it's just like a prehistoric primitive thing in their brain of watching someone get scared and find that funny.
Yeah, it's a safe way to get in touch with that. You know, at the end of the day, you're watching a video, you're going to be okay. Everything, it's going to be fine. But just having that charge that comes from it, there's nothing else like it. I mean, it's something, it's just I guess you would call it, it's almost like empty calories where it's this thing. It's just immediate. It's gratifying. And then you move on. And it's just this fun little thing that just dissipates. And that's why it works so well in the short form mediums, I think. And it's such a interesting idea and such a great idea that you're running with here. At what point did you realize that you were, because this was an evolution over time where you said like, okay, I think I'm really onto something here.
Yeah. So this was about, and I did trial and error so many things. And nothing was really necessarily sticking in terms of like really scaring people. But it was about 3 years ago, I finally got an idea where if I was to just manipulate two people together and intersect between them and just jump scare both parties at the same time, I might have something there. And I did that, posted some videos of it, and then moved on and just started doing something else. And then I noticed just as some time went by that it started really picking up some views. And I was like, wait a second. Okay, that's working. Let's go back to it. And as I was doing it, it's getting reactions, it's phenomenal. But it started getting so hard because people's attention span on the internet has been going down tremendously.
For sure.
And they don't stick around too often. So just about a year ago, I was like, okay, I'm going to dumb it down, make it simple, faster, and more effective. I'm going to do a fake skip. I'm going to do as much as I possibly can behind the scenes to get some of the best possible clips together. Because before that, I used to literally run as fast as I can to the next room and tackle my friend and hope that person didn't skip in the meantime as I was running 500 feet. I learned very quickly that that was just not realistic and not something I could work with. So when we dumbed it down to just a simple fake skip, quick clip, my wife back in right there, about a year ago, I was like, we got something that's an absolute winner, something that I can do on the daily, get some of the best reactions sometimes, and something that we could just repurpose and post on all social medias. And doing that was the biggest explosion of success that I could have never even comprehended mentally that it would get to the point where it is today.
So this is your job, waking up and doing this at what point do you wake up and go, every job is a grind after a while. There's things you hate about it, things you love about it. It's a job. There's a reason you get paid for it. But is there still that sense of, I would imagine, like, okay, when's the rug getting pulled out from under me? How am I making a living doing this?
Yeah, no, that's a concept and an idea that I think all the time. And I'm beyond fortunate and very blessed to be in the situation I'm in. I've been streaming and making content and evolving it for the past 9 years now, since I was in high school. So I've been doing this for so long. And there has been times where I have changed what I've done completely, 180, and still found success out of it. And I think the biggest reason for why I've been able to do it is because I have built a very strong community that follows me no matter what I do over these past years. There are people that have been watching me since they were 12, when I was 18. And now they're going to college and they're still watching me. I think it's like that strong community that will still support me where I go and really just like let me know and guide me, which is really what helps me, I think, stay in this sphere for this long and still enjoy it. I feel like if it wasn't for the streaming aspect of it and getting the immediate feedback with everything I do, I think I would have definitely lost motivation a long time ago. And I don't even think I would have gotten to where I am today at the moment.
Yeah, the live feedback element of it, when you don't have, it can feel like you're in a vacuum. It just doesn't. And even though you see the numbers going up, it's something that doesn't, as intangible as this is, that's even more divorced from reality, just doing this stuff. So yeah, completely understand. It's like, am I doing this for anyone at this point? What am I doing? I completely get that. So then what's going to be next for you after this? Are you starting to think of the next project? Is it still with live streaming video? Do you think about doing like a scripted project or anything? Because you have writing chops, clearly.
So I have been thinking about that for the past year. As the months have been going, it has been getting a lot harder to obviously get reactions. And it's always in the back of my mind, okay, so if this doesn't work out and I just can't keep doing this, what's my next step? And I definitely want to do something that's more personality based and maybe something that's even to do with film or being a scary guy or playing a character as someone scary, just because at this point, I feel like for so many years now, I have just been in this mindset. I'm trying my best to instill fear into people at the same time, giving them a great reaction to the people that are watching. And I still want to still push that with my personality in maybe different forms of media or something that's, you know, in a larger aspect with much more production. Because right now the production value is as simple as it gets. There's really nothing to it right now, but I definitely want to do something much more in the near future. This year.
Oh, wow. So do you have that in mind? You're going to say, is that something you'll do on YouTube for direct? Like, kind of? Okay. Awesome. Later this year we can expect it? It's pretty early. So
it's too early for me to say it because I still need to plan it all out, but I have some really big plans for the year in terms of doing something personality driven, which still goes in terms of getting the viewers to watch and be like, oh, I love this because this is still the content that I love. He's still scaring people, but on a bigger scale.
What does your wife think of this? If she was sitting here and asking, okay, so what do you think about what John does every day? What would she say to that?
I know she loves me. I do know for a fact that I definitely am a burden at sometimes because it will be 2 a.m. and I'll be like, sweetie, come here right now.
Yeah.
We have 2 seconds. Pretend to be a hostage. Frizz your hair up. Look scared. And she immediately in the chair, running scared. But I do know that she is 100% supportive, and she is definitely down to help me with any concept, any idea that I have. I just got to give her a little bit of time ahead of, expectations of when to be ready. But she helps me 99% of the time, and she's very supportive, which obviously she wasn't supportive. I don't think this relationship would have worked.
No, not at all. But it's that thing where, for me personally, I've been married for 14 years, coming up on 15 years, and having somebody that just doesn't buy into my bullshit is very helpful. Somebody who's not impressed by anything I do. I like having that around just to keep me humble. It's very important. Kids do that too. So
yeah, no.
Today's episode of the Following Films podcast is brought to you by Bookmans. So the last time I went into Bookmans, I went straight over to the movie section, as I often do, and I was so excited because one of my favorite things that happens when I go in there, I'm looking for a movie and I don't know exactly what I want to see, something I've been meaning to see, and there's a blind spot. And when I saw East of Eden, I was super excited because it's a movie I've been wanting to see for years, but for whatever reason, I've just never gotten around to it. So the film adaptation of John Steinbeck's East of Eden, it's a powerful cinematic achievement. I know I'm not the first person to say this, but it absolutely does justice to the novel's what can only be described as profound themes and the complex characters. It's directed by Kazan and features outstanding performances from the whole cast, but mainly here by James Dean as Cal Trask. The film captures the essence of the book while adding its own visual and emotional dimension. The cinematography, which looks absolutely incredible in 4K, captures the rugged beauty of the California landscape. So it sets the stage for this intense family drama that unfolds throughout the film. And the screenplay manages to condense this complex novel that is East of Eden without feeling truncated. It makes this really intricate plot, takes that and then just condenses it down and really only gets the essential elements of it. And all the themes are still intact with love, jealousy, and the struggle between good and evil. That's all there. And it doesn't feel like a lesser than. It feels like a complement to. If you've read East of Eden and haven't seen the film, definitely catch up on it. Highly recommend it. If you've only seen the film and haven't read the book, definitely check out the book as well. It's worth your time. But in the movie, James Dean's portrayal of the troubled Cal, it's nothing short of iconic. It showcases his raw talent and charisma. The supporting cast is also incredible, especially Julie Harris, I think, does an equally compelling job here with just an outstanding performance. And there's a depth and authenticity to these characters that wasn't very common for this time. So it's something pretty remarkable here. East of Eden, it's absolutely a classic that continues to resonate to this day, still holds up. I think that's mainly because of its exploration of human nature and the complexity of family dynamics. It's a timeless masterpiece that deserves a place in the Annals of Cinematic History. I think it's there. It just took me a long time to catch up with it. This is a must watch for anyone who appreciates powerful storytelling and exceptional performances. So remember, next time you go to Bookman's, they have your cool covered. Hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
They do.
And so then, what is the biggest surprise for you out of doing this? Is there anything that is just, if you would look back at when you're doing esports and that kind of stuff a couple of years ago and where you are today, is there something that just you came into that you would never have expected?
Yeah, there's so many aspects of it that I don't even comprehend how it even is the way it is today. I started this back 9 years ago when I was still in high school, and I just wanted to get people to join my clan in Clash of Clans and build up a little clan of people.
Yeah.
That's all I did it for. And I quickly really fell in love with the idea of streaming and building up a community. And gaming itself was great. I loved it. It was a great way for me to start building a community. But I quickly realized I don't really care too much about the gaming aspect of it. I really just care about the community and the personality that I could really portray out there with different skits and ideas, and people love it. I never thought it would get to the size that it is today, and the fact that it's still growing to this day as well. I'm blown away on every aspect. A lot of people, they look at what I'm doing right now and they're like, oh, that's easy. And the one thing I just want to say is that this has been literally failure after failure after failure to really sculpt out the idea, the concept, the niche that we are doing mm-hmm. today. And I know for a fact that if it wasn't for the guidance of my community, I would have never been able to achieve as much as I have today. I don't know what the future has in store, but I am beyond blown away with how far we've come from just a humble beginning of playing mobile games to scaring people today. Every aspect blows my mind away.
Well, the best ideas are the obvious ones, the ones that you look at and you go, oh, well, that is easy. I can see how this works. I get it. It just makes sense. But being one of the first ones to think of something and be the person that actually puts those two ideas together, whatever they happen to be, it's some of the things that just absolutely take off culturally. There are things that you look at and you say, oh, that's so obvious. Why didn't somebody come up with this idea sooner? And it's just right there. You know, when you combine certain elements together, it's just, yeah, it just works. And I think you've done that clearly with this. This is something that just clearly has a lot of life in it.
Yeah, no, I think about that all the time. And like I said, only way I think I would have ever achieved this is by trying something all the time. Just because at the end of the day, people look at it, oh, fake skip, jump scare, that's simple. Oh, hacking between two calls and intersecting and scaring people, that's simple. I mean, it is simple, but nobody did it. And there are other simple things out there that has never been done yet. I don't know what they are, but I'm going to try to find out. I'm going to keep trying. I don't care if I fail onto it. If it does get a good reaction and it does get a good laugh out of the audience, it's worth a try.
Absolutely. You have to be comfortable failing. Yep. I think not being scared of failure is one of the most important life lessons. And getting out of the way of your ego is one of the most difficult things to do when you're young. And just as you get older, I think you learn that your ego is just the thing, that a barrier that you have to get out of. And especially when it comes to being a creative, because it's such a vulnerable thing to put things out into the world. And you don't want people, the internet can be a lot of things, and cruel is definitely one of them. Or I don't know which is worse. Is it worse to be ignored or worse to get negative feedback? Probably, I don't know. Ignored, at least if you get people that hate you, at least you got an emotion, which is something.
I mean, the internet's going to give you all kinds of criticism, negative and positive as well. And obviously there are people that are just going to hate, but yeah. Most of the time it's just because they want to get a reaction out of you. And that's typically what it is. For how long I've been doing it, I've learned my lesson. And, you know, as much as there's a lot of bad, there's a lot of good in it too. I mean, if it wasn't for all the criticism and feedback, I definitely would have never evolved, and I definitely wouldn't have taken risks. And I agree with what you said. An ego is definitely a big obstacle. It's the one thing that really keeps us from going and trying something different, because I have changed my content many years in the making, and a lot of them didn't do great. They failed. There was a long time, even when I was just starting with Omegle, I made no progress, no growth, nothing for months on end. And I was trying something different every single day. But the one thing that I kept on having consistency was an audience to let me know what I should be doing next. And with that kind of mindset, I was able to get where we are today. So definitely trying is so much worth rather than not giving anything an attempt.
Oh, yeah. And if it's something that you believe in, just because it doesn't connect right out of the gate, just keep doing it because you're probably on to something. Just because it doesn't find its way immediately overnight, because we've heard that story and seen that story so many times, just keep at it. You know, there's a million bands that you probably heard before they broke. And when you show them to every one of your friends, people go, they fucking love this band. This is great. How have I not heard of them? And it's that kind of thing. And it's eventually they break and it just makes sense. It's just sometimes you're ahead of the curve, and that's why it can be tough to get there. So I wonder though, just with being in this combination between horror and comedy for you, for me, the thing that I like about your videos, they are funny at the end of the day. It's the charge that I get from that. It's seeing people's reaction that is funny. It's why I love going to see a horror film in a theater. Even if something doesn't get me necessarily, or it does get me, but when you feel the audience gasp and it just makes me smile endlessly when I see that, is the comedy part as important to you as the scare or something you think of?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think the comedy aspect is sometimes it will outweigh the scare, because people that do see a scare, they find it funny, they enjoy it, but it's a very lackluster, you know, reaction for them because they move on to the next thing. I think comedy echoes on a much longer time. And for the amount of time I've been doing it, I've always enjoyed that. I've always leaned onto that because especially if I don't get a scare, at least there's a comedy aspect into it. At least there's something that's still funny to be found, whether it be in a short form or in a video or in a live stream. So yeah, no, definitely. I feel like even with the comedy aspect, I definitely want to lead onto that as the years go on, because maybe I won't be always jump scaring and scaring people in some way.
Sure.
I can still make people laugh. That is the most important thing to me, just because I feel like that's what's going to keep me going for maybe another 9-10 years of content creation.
Well, it's such it kind of just triggered something there where, you know, I'm 47. So I grew up in a time, you know, I saw the birth of cable television, and then I've seen the decline of it. And, you know, when there was sort of these monoliths of culture, these things that everybody, you know, 30% of the country would be watching one show on a given night. And now we have all these silos. And when things really catch fire, you can have somebody that is getting the number of views on YouTube that's greater than, you know, a household name on broadcast television, which is just something that's so fucking incredible to me, because nobody gave you permission. You just did this on your own. And I love that about that. And that's why I'm sitting here. Nobody gave me permission. I just decided to start doing this one day. And here we are. Could you talk about that kind of concept of just making something on your own that is essentially as powerful or has as deep of a reach as anything at this point?
I mean, yeah, that's a great question, because I feel like a lot of people ask that kind of question from multiple different angles, and they want to get into this kind of, you know, sphere of making their own content, making their own mark. But I just feel like a lot of people, it's filled with lots of self-doubt and a lot of ideas that they, you know, they have, but they don't really execute onto it. And the way I could really give it is, a lot of people with their mindset, with content creation and creativity and really doing something on their own, I feel like they're like in a boat with one oar. They're trying. They're just going in a circle. They're not making much progress, but they're really getting tired. I just feel like people really need to open up and expand their horizons. And if they want to make a massive difference, if they want to do something that is going to be seen by people, the biggest thing is, rather than putting so much effort for the wrong reasons, whether it be finances, fame, all these things that people think is what's going to find them that real success and happiness, and that drive is realistically a lackluster feeling. Anyone that's going into what I'm doing, what you're doing, what anyone's doing that wants to make a massive difference and be seen, it has to be done with passion and a niche that makes you stand out. Something that people can see and go, that's different. I like that. And he seems like he actually cares, or she cares. I'm all about it. Because at the end of the day, if you're doing it for the wrong reasons, and people are not dumb, they can see right through you. If you're doing it for only just the aspect of money, people will see right through that. And that's not genuine. That's not authentic. They will just move on to somebody else, and they want to gravitate towards someone that's doing it for the right reasons. So that is the biggest thing I can give to anybody that wants to do something anywhere relevant in terms of pushing themselves out of their comfort zone and hitting a large audience.
Well, it's the, and I couldn't agree with you more. It's the idea of cynicism, where you can have something, you can be a cynical person, have a cynical point of view about the world and express that. But if you express it with heart and it's the genuine reflection of how you feel, then I think that you can connect with people. But if you're expressing something with cynicism, meaning that you're expressing it just because you want to get likes, just because you want to get follows, just because you think this thing will lead to the next thing that you think will eventually make you happy. The thing is, when you build your foundation on cynicism, eventually it just, you have nothing, because it doesn't really matter at the end. And if you put your heart into something, even if it doesn't work, you know you made the thing that mattered to you. And that's all that matters in the end, really.
Absolutely. Passion, drive. Because if you're doing it with exactly what you just explained, you're just building up an empire of nothing underneath you, and it just feels empty. And a lot of people do it all the time. Social media, in all kinds of way. I feel like a lot of people, they'll just see something that's doing really good, they're going to take it, they're going to copy it exactly, regurgitate it with no personality, no drive. And yeah, they might get some views and whatnot, but there's really no community base and there's really no substance to it. And that's a lot of content creation these days. Yeah. They're just copying exactly what someone else is doing without even adding. I mean, there's nothing wrong with copying, but to add some type of personal spin to it, it goes a long way, because people can see that then.
Well, it's almost, we have to copy to learn how to express ourselves. Mm-hmm. You have to, you know, you follow somebody else, you learn to play guitar by picking up other people's chords and strumming them together. And then you start throwing them around in your own way and figuring things out. You don't find your voice right out of the gate. So give yourself grace, you know, give yourself time to figure it out. But it's just you're learning how to ride a bicycle in front of an audience though. And that can be, it's not for everyone, but I tend to think it's a lot of fun.
It's fun, but it's stressful.
Yeah, for sure.
Nothing like somebody telling you the honest truth that you suck at something. But you know, but it's sobering though.
Yeah, absolutely.
It helps you get up and do something different and try something different.
For sure. And also you have to allow certain criticism in and you have to allow certain praise in. You can't just go one or the other. Don't allow all the criticism in, don't allow all the praise in. You have to be selective. You can tell pretty quickly if the feedback is honest or not. So sometimes people on the internet are really good at finding what your weakness is and just diving into it. They find your insecurity and they just double down on it. And they're pretty incredible about that. So
it's a talent. Trust me.
Awesome.
A lot of people roast me for being bald, but I try my absolute best to find their Achilles heel. And if I can't, I'll try to come together.
Well, that there's certain things that have nothing to do with us. I mean, bald is just something that, you're bald. It's, you know, hey, I have I have burns on my hands. So there's just things that happen that are, it just is a part of your makeup of who you are. And you can either lean into that or you can try to hide it, cover it with makeup, put on a mustache, put on a fake beard, put on a toupee, do whatever you want. Just be comfortable. Doesn't matter. So just to me personally.
No, absolutely. I mean, you got to accept it. Trust me. When I first started balding, I wasn't accepting it, but I did.
I feel it coming back. The hairline is definitely starting to creep back at this point. No, it is. It's
no,
going.
No,
it's,
no, no,
I'll
bro.
Be there soon enough. I'll be
no,
there.
No, no, no. I started balding at 18. I went fully bald at 23. I've been bald since then. I'm 27 now, and I'm bald like a marble.
The amazing thing is, though, 20 years from now, people are not going to think you aged a day. You're going to have the Steve Martin effect when he went gray at 25 years old. And people just thought, like, you look at him now and he's in his late 70s and people just don't think he's aged, and that's it. You know,
well, so. I'd like to hope that I stay the same over the years.
Awesome. Well, John, it was a pleasure to meet you, man. I really appreciate it. This was a lot of fun.
And thank you so much for your time as well. I hope you have a wonderful day. And thank you once again.
You too. Take care, man.
Take it easy, man. Have a good
one. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Time enough to figure you out. Time enough to write this down. Wish me luck, give me hope.
voice crack.